tanto las líneas de IPC, their portfolio committee have exhausted all avenues in their own, if any other issues they will raise. Thank you, Chairman, for saying.
I don't understand the dialogue.
Let's raise the issue that you want to raise on the bottom and let us respond to it.
Okay.
For that, we have our parliamentary teams here to give us legal advice, also the state law advisor. Can we ask you, please, Honorable Mobosi, sorry, Mrs. Mobosi, or Mr. Wern, to help us?
Can you give us a minute to confer with my colleague?
Okay, no problem. Let's do that. On the second part of the point that was raised, Honorable Members, I'm trying to find a way in which we can get the work done within the conference. Remember that we are finalizing this, not today. We're finalizing it next week. Grace, am I right? We're finalizing it when we meet next week. Right. So, the task before us today is to receive, Honorable Fundament, the mandates are quite clear. What some provinces have done, they've given us two documents. The one is a document to say they support the bill. We have that one province raising the problem vis-a-vis support for the bill. What we do, however, have are recommendations on a separate thing, what they call the amendments, which they are giving to us. My understanding of that is that they're saying it would help the professionalism in terms of the content of the bill if you could look at this. There is no one province that has said we support the bill on condition that. Because what they're doing is that they are showing their trust in us as members of the Select Committee to be able to deal with the legislation in a responsible manner. And therefore, what they are expecting us to do is to debate the amendments that they have and for us to make a final decision thereon. There is no one province that has said this is the condition for support of the law. They have said you've consulted with us, these are the concerns that we have. Consider them as you work on finalizing the law.
You have just said we're not finishing the debate today.
Honorable Panman, I have said let us not debate.
No,
let us not dialogue.
There's a program in front of me that said the 10th of May we're doing the final mandate.
That's what I said.
But that means we are only debating on the negotiating mandate today. Then it goes back to the provinces, and by next week, Tuesday, you want the final mandate here from the various provinces. That's what you are saying. That's what this program says.
If there are any changes that we make, then we'll have to take it back to the province. If we are not making changes, we have the mandate on the whole that stands now from the provinces. Therefore, I didn't want to give members of the House the impression that there is going to be changes, such as silent on that matter. I did say, however, that what's going to happen is that we are not going to finalize it today. I thought it would be improper for me to say we cannot make changes. It's your decision as to whether you want to make the changes or not. What we have to do is to read each one of the mandates. not donate money. If, however, members want us to spend more time on an amendment, I'm going to be fair with you. I'm not going to steamroll. I'm going to allow you to make your opinion on that mandate. Sorry, on the amendment. Honourable Saleh?
It's just a point of clarity, Chairperson. So, if ever I would want to read the recommendations for my province, am I allowed to do so?
That's what you're here for.
Thank you very much.
But I would want to plead with you that if it's not a recommendation from your province, if it's just a conversation that we had in your province, let us limit us. I'm not saying don't do it, but I'm saying let's limit it. Because we've all had the mandates before, except for Hauteng that came this morning. Honourable Ntera, then I'm going to give to our legal minds to help us. Honourable Ntera?
Could I humbly suggest that we don't read the mandate because we have them. We have had them since last week. So that we save time.
It's a procedural matter. We have to read it.
Thank you, sir.
The mandate, not the amendment.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Can we hear from our legal team?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in terms of the mandating procedure of Provinces Act, there is no time frame that's specified for the negotiating mandate, Chairperson. And as you indicated, Chairperson, today, if we get a negotiating mandate, the final mandate will have to the procedure of the final mandate is more or less a little bit different because the signature is done by the speaker and for the negotiating is done by the chairperson. So there's a little bit of difference between the two. But I was just addressing the issue of the time frame, chairperson, in respect of the aid.
Okay, Honourable
Chairperson, do we have a mandate from Gauteng?
We do, yes.
I have not seen it.
Sorry? It was an over.
Because you see, I did not get it, but say for instance it wasn't here. Then in terms of the ruling or the advice that we've just been given, what is the situation then? Because that means that the gate is forever open. Do you understand?
Honourable,
so there must be a deadline. In the DORA bill, we rejected things that were outdated because they were not correct. You understand? Because the date was wrong. And on the ground, they are. So we can't have a rule in one select committee and it's not applied in the same way in the next select committee. Because then it becomes a wishy-washy grey area without any discipline. And I can't associate myself or my party with a wishy-washy situation.
We note that, and I will make sure that our management in the NCOP is informed of the concern that you have raised. If I can recap for you, what we're then going to do, we're going to go through the mandates in alphabetical sequence, starting with Eastern Cape. What we'll ask the delegates who I am to read just the mandate of that province, and then to speak, if you want to, on the recommendations that comes from the province. In cases where we do not have a province like Free State in KwaZulu-Natal, if you will allow me then as a chairperson to just read the mandate itself. And then in terms of the recommendations, can I bring in our support staff to help us there with the recommendations? Can you help us on the recommendations from the two provinces on Free State and KZN? When we get to them. Thank you very much. Also, the other point that Honorable van Linden has raised, let's just clarify that. We're not going to go through all the provinces and then come back. We are going to deal with one province at a time. We may not make a final decision, but we will capture the comments, concerns that are being raised, and we still have until next week to reach, no, we must do it at this meeting. In this meeting, we will then have to look at the comments that were made by the various provinces, and we'll have to decide what we do as the select committee with those comments. If I can give but one example, there is a province that says that we need to look at the definition of property. But what they then do is to also say what should be included in their definition. So we look at that. And we don't need to decide as we do with that province. We'll see if there's any other province that raises it as well. And then towards the end of our deliberations, we will decide on that. Now, honourable members, we have until 1 o'clock. And it is now 10:30. Somebody was better in maths, who was in the maths class. How many hours do we have? 2.5 hours. So if we have 2.5 hours, and we have 9 provinces, let's divide 9 by 2.5. 2.5 hours is how many minutes? 60, 30. 150 divided by 9 gives us... Where's the mathematicians? No, it should be easy. 12 minutes. Right. So let's try and confine ourselves to 12 minutes per province.
And may I address you?
Yes, please, sir.
I will have to leave at 12. Of course, strategy is different.
Honourable Tebe will have to talk to you then. I don't think it's a good thing. I have an ethics committee meeting at 11:45 and I'm not going. I apologize. I think I would want to plead with you, Honourable Timunya, that you stick with us until we have completed our business, please.
My predicament is that I'm part of the defending team this afternoon, so I cannot really, I actually have orders from Chief to be there.
Meeting at what? The meeting is scheduled for what? No, the debating team. It's a party political matter. Are you covered, Honourable Chair?
I'm not covered, sir. I'm
not covered. Okay. Let's start with the Eastern Cape, Honourable... Rita.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, the Eastern Cape is voting in favor of the bill. In terms of a recommendation, Chair, that is not a condition for what I'm about to recommend. The Eastern Cape is saying the timeline set for municipalities of 2 days, of 20 days, is not enough. They therefore recommend 30 days instead. So that's the recommendation that is coming from the Eastern Cape. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, let me just accept that, because under point one, that you have covered very briefly, where they're just saying the province votes in favour and mandates the Eastern Cape delegate. Then under from point two, that's actually what other provinces have dealt with as proposed recommendations and amendments from point two. And you are there only highlighting 2.4. Can I just check with the legal advisors and the deputy minister? Do you have copies of all the documents that we're dealing with? With exception of 4. Can Vanessa? Can you just make sure that the legal team and the deputy minister Groner have the Gauteng documentation as well? I have a set here, so you don't have to worry about me. Honourable Van Lange?
I do believe that
the other points raised in terms of 2.1 and 2.2 and 2.3 must also be considered, because that is what they say, negotiate within the following parameters. So if we do not consider the other three above 2.4, then I'm afraid we are neglecting our duties.
Okay. Let's look at 2.1. 2.1 says the municipal manager, but that also, okay, it's also the 20 days. The municipal manager. 2.2 talks about registered mayor in terms of the communication on that item in the book. And it also then on the second page talks about a notification period, which is 10 days. And that is particularly related to the registered mayor. 2.3 is basically explaining 2.4, if I'm correct. Okay. Then we've dealt with them all. Let's have a discussion on that, honorable members. Honorable Tebe, let me see who wants to talk. Honorable Tebe, honorable Van Linden, and then I would want to make a comment on that as well. Let's have us three, and then we move on to the next comments. Honorable Tebe.
Chair, the recommendation to extend from 20 days to 30 days makes a bit of a logical sense, and I think we must be considerate that in all intents and purposes, the intent is to make sure that all the affected parties are communicated to well in advance, they receive adequate information, and I think that's the intent and the purpose of extending time, so that the process, the administrative process, can be adequately addressed. I think it's making a lot of sense, and I want to suggest that we acknowledge and support it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me. Okay, I'll come back to that.
Chairperson, I want to actually talk in favor of the extension of the period, simply because.
Is that also 2.4, just to make sure that we
can. Yeah, the extension of the period. The province talks about a written, a registered mail. But you know, if I take the Langkloof, for instance, in the Jutina district, right down to Muskin, a lot of those post offices actually have closed down. So I don't know where they're going to fetch their mail and how often people go to town, because it's, you know. Now, this is, the Langkloof has certain areas that are deep rural, but the other areas that are not deep rural. And I think that attorneys in that area have specifically raised the problem of some post offices closing down and just becoming post boxes. So they say they haven't got legal documents which they must get hard copies for. So I think the bill is correct in B, is it B, to somewhere there, where it says written notice. So there must be a way to find written notice, because registered mail is not possible in all areas, especially the deep rural areas. So the 30 days, I think, is a fair extension.
I have a problem precisely with the point that you're making about the post office, Honorable Van Linden, that indications are, as we speak now, that the post office staff may go on strike during this week. We know that our postal services and the postal services all over the world are struggling because people are using modern technology. However, what we do not want to see is that the expropriation authority would not give enough notice to the affected parties. That's what we want to address. And we want to make sure as well that there is no communication that goes out to say, but we have given you notice. So we're trying to address that. And therefore, I would support the extension from what it is in the bill to a longer period. I'm not ever having a difficulty when we say a registered mail. Because what do we do in an area where the post office is not functioning? Or what do we do in a situation where the post office is on strike? We then paint ourselves in a corner. Now, one of my mentors in dealing with these issues, Dr. Sheila Duncan, said that when you deal with legislation, be very careful that you don't be too specific, but also don't be too general. And we need to find that balance. Now, for me, the difficulty that I have is when we say, must a registered mail, we are not giving our subs enough reasonable grounds to maneuver. That's the first point. My second point is on 2.1, where we there, and in the second line, we talk about the municipal manager must within 20 days of receipt. Now, legal team, please help me on that. I did not look at the clause that this is referring to, and I don't have a copy of the act, the bill before me now. But does that clause refer to a municipal manager? I can't remember, as I read the bill, ever giving that authority to a municipal manager. So just help me with the municipal manager part of that. So it's actually the two that I'm raising. The one is a municipal manager, the second one is the registered mail. Honorable Pandana, did you still want to speak on that? Sure.
The clause reads, if the land has been expropriated, is subject to the charges contemplated in subsection 1, the municipal manager must, that is at the 20 days, inform the expropriating authority in writing of such charges. So the municipal manager is not expropriating.
It's just about the charges.
He must inform the expropriating authority of the outstanding charges of property rights.
I'm then happy with that. I'm happy with that. I'm happy with 2.1. I'm the only one who raises, so I'm happy, and it's okay. Let's get the opinion from the legal advisors on the registered mail case, and then also help us, Deputy Minister, we will allow you to say to us what you think. You can't influence our decision making. We will make our own decisions. The Deputy Minister is a Member of Parliament.
I'm here to listen. I'm afraid to have discussions in the corridor outside with anybody who might want. But
thank you.
My legal team can help. But I agree. Let's respect, and I do want to respect that. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's have the legal advisors helping us on the extension period and then the registered man. Are you ready to help us?
Should we deal with, as we did, the matter to your earlier point of not being too general and too specific when dealing with legislation? Should we really deal at this point of doing legislation? Because I know the fact that in some cases you do have regulations that get developed after the act has been enacted. Some of the nitty-gritty details can be addressed at that level of regulation.
I agree with you. That's precisely why I said we shouldn't be too general or too specific. But let's just hear on the point that you're making to support your argument. Are there going to be regulations? Please, Mr. Owen.
Yes, the bill makes provision for the making of regulations, but also, clause 25 of the bill deals with the extension of time. So whenever there is a problem with a specific time period, in the bill there is a possibility of extending it.
That is an example, Honourable Mtimunya, of saying let's not be too specific. If the bill says we can extend the term, but it gives that authority. So once we now put this in, is that section 19.3 of the bill?
No, it is clause 25, where it deals with generally extension of time periods.
Have you looked at section 19.3, Mr. Wynne?
Yes, Chair. But 19.3 prescribes a time period, and if the authority is unable to perform in that period in terms of 25, clause 25, he can apply, he or she can apply for an extension of the time period.
Okay. The bill as it stands before us at the moment, in 19.3, refers to the municipal manager and says he must, the municipal property rates or other charges within 20 days, referred to in subsection 1. But you are saying, Mr. Wern, that in terms of section 25, that period can be extended. Let's get a final comment from any of the members on that. None. Okay. Can we then take that as having dealt with the Eastern Cape? Remember, we agreed we'll come back to a final decision. Can we then go to the next province, which is KwaZulu-Natal? Oh, sorry. How did I put them in my file? Oh, okay, Free State. Free State? Contact Eliza? Can you? Yes, please.
Thank you, Chair. For the Free State, the negotiating mandate is as follows. Chapter 1, definition. It said on page 5, line 27. Under
No.
That's the recommendation.
What we should just have for the record is the page before that. No.
Yes.
Okay.
It says on definition on page 5, line 27 under definition of expropriation, omit an expropriating authority and insert the minister, and delete the latter sentence, and for an organ of the state upon request to an expropriating authority. The motivation is as follows. This will align the definition with section 3, which authorize only the minister to expropriate. Under definition value, line 27 on page 2, insert a new definition of valuation. Valuation has a corresponding meaning to include valuation of property, not limited to land, for instance, market valuation. Chapter 2, on page 6, line 51, substitute must after minister and insert may. The motivation is as follows. Substitution is in line with the provision of section 3 in line 47. Chapter 3, on page 7, line 36, after authorized, omit A, insert and appoint qualified. On page 7, line 53, after unless, insert duly. On page 7, line 53, after authority, insert or cause, omit to do so. Chapter 9, on page 22, line 12, punishment must be prescribed in the Act. on page 22, line 23, to omit sub-paragraph 1 and to substitute A, the minister must, within 12 months of the commencement of this act, make regulations consistent with this act. Chapter 6, insert subsection 21, subsection 1, A, to provide for an owner of the property who challenges the expropriations in a court of law and is unable to bear the legal cost must be provided with legal fees or representation by the state. The portfolio committee, therefore the portfolio committee votes in favor of the bill.
Okay, that's where I wanted you to start. They vote in favor. Then they have their amendments. Colleague, I'm sorry, we had to do it differently because we don't have a right from the Free State to do that. But there we have them. If I read them, I think they, I don't know the influence. But they sound reasonable. They sound reasonable. Are there any comments on the changes that they are proposing? Honourable Bonnellan, Honourable Tebe. To our legal team, sorry, I'm going to call you the legal team for Mr. Wen and Mrs. Mabosa. Please, at any time, don't wait for me to refer to you. Honourable Van Lingen.
Thank you, Chairperson. On chapter, there are lots of items that I raise here. I am not totally in agreement with the first one, but then you will see later on the valuation is questioned in the other mandate as they are coming through. On page chapter 2, we mustn't swap must with may. May with must, I mean. And then others are a bit difficult to follow so fast. Then point number 4 that's raised there under chapter 3, it says on page 22, line 12, punishment must be prescribed in the Act. And that I have a problem with, because if payment is not taking place on time, then what happens in an order deed of sale? If the deposit is not paid on time, the deed of sale falls through. If the final payment doesn't come through on time, the deed falls through. You understand? You get it when you buy my house and I buy on condition, that condition that you pay for my house, I then buy her house. But if your deal falls flat, I haven't got the money, so my deal with her falls flat. Now, this can happen too. And the punishment, how do you regulate the punishment? If the deal, if payment doesn't take place on the prescribed time on in the bill, then the deal must fall through. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Between you and me, we must admit that whenever there's debt between a municipality and a province or a province and national government, they don't pay interest. They say, no, the state does not pay interest. Because they, I don't know where the argument comes from, because we know they're supposed to pay within 30 days. But they don't pay. So the punishment must be the contract falls away. There can't be a punishment clause, because then you enter into a whole new legal argument. Do you follow what I'm saying? Then the last one on chapter 6 is, subsection 21 is a very difficult subsection. It should be rewritten altogether. But looking at this, the owner of the property who challenges the expropriation in court of law and is unable to bear the legal costs must be provided with legal services for the presentation by the state. Chairperson, when do you determine that, or how do you determine that a person is unable to bear or is able to bear the costs? Do you understand what I'm saying? During this drought, a whole lot of the farmers have overextended themselves with input costs. So can they afford a legal process now? Do you follow what I'm saying? A legal process is an expensive one. I mean, really very expensive. It is not an easy matter. It can go on for up to 3 years. I mean, you know, I don't have to mention 783 cases to you. So it's a long case. My problem is, how do you, you must say the state must bear the costs, or you can't say the owner of the property who challenges the expropriation in court of law and is unable to bear the legal costs. It can't be one or the other, because it is going to be a legal case on its own. Can you afford to defend yourself in court? Oh, you can't. Well, then don't go to court. Do you understand the headwinds that we can get in this argument?
It's just the... Sorry, Honourable Ted, I noticed you. The problem that I'm having is that you are speaking in favour of what is written here.
No.
But your motivation. Your motivation is to say that if a farmer at the moment is affected by the drought, but he can't pay the legal cost, then...
What I'm trying to say is, if you make it good for one, you must make it good for all. Or in all the other mandates that are coming through, it says that the state must bear the cost of the legal expenses.
Legal team, I'll give you an opportunity now. Let's have Honourable Mtimunya before I get to you, please.
Can we say, my request is that, can we also, as the legal team addresses us, can we also define here property? Because in my understanding of the bill, property is not limited to land. We must be very careful not to be biased to land issues only when we talk about the properties. And the second part is, what then becomes the process after we have dealt with this mandate ourselves as a committee? Is this bill still going to go back to the state to advise us to check its compliance with the Constitution, to check its implications and all those things, so that we are clear what is going to happen and we are safe in terms of the constitutionality of what we are doing here.
The state law advisors do not operate just on their own. We are at liberty to request them to do certain things for us. So we have a responsibility on the point that you are raising with regards to our reverence to the state law advisors. But, Honourable Terry, do you still want to speak?
Chair, the submission says on page 5, line 27, under definition of expropriation, we must omit an expropriation authority and instead the minister. I want to add, Chair, that according to Honourable Van Lingen, are you responsible for this?
Which? No, it wasn't you. Honourable Kevin?
I want to argue that the definition as appearing on the draft bill is consistent with the how we define expropriating body, but also consistent with how we would want it to align with all the law requirements.
So are you referring there, sorry, the lights distracted me, are you referring particularly to the legislation on what you call the expropriation body?
No, we agree that in the state you have 3 tiers of government. And you have the local, municipality, province, and sometimes in the past when we argued, when we were deliberating on the bill, we asked a question. If you have a national road passing through a local municipality, what then do you do? The intent and the purpose of the bill is that all other bodies must be engaged, and the expropriating body is then given the authority to process. If you are going to take it away and you want to give it sole definition of being a minister. It is taking away, watering down the intent and the purpose of the bill. So I think we must, in my submission, I want to argue that we retain the original clause as appearing on the bill. Secondly, under the definition value, line 27 on page 2, they want us to insert the word valuation. A value is somebody, according to the layman understanding on my part, a person who is going to be given the authority to go and value the property and give a tangible account of what the property can. So I think we must retain that. Valuation has a corresponding meaning to that's where they are explaining. The issue of changing the minister may, substituting minister must with the minister may, I don't think we must change it. I think we must retain the original text. Page 7, line 36, after authorized, omitted, instead appoint, qualified. If you can check all the clauses of the draft bill, you will see that there's an emphasis on the people who are correctly qualified to do this work, like your quantity surveyors and your valuer, that are going to be properly qualified to do this work. So I think this matter is covered there. So I think some of the issues here, they are very cosmetic. They are not necessarily addressing any problem that is, maybe the province will be violently opposed to our own submission. So I think let's agree that the submission by the province agree with the bill, but the proposal submitted, I don't think the carry water. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Let's hear from the legal advisor, please.
Chairperson, I would like to address the last recommendation, the one that talks about the payment of legal fees. Chairperson, in the back of that, I think the challenge would be, if for example, if it's a normal legal challenge, if you can afford the legal fees, what do you normally do? If you qualify for legal aid, you qualify for legal aid. If you don't qualify for legal aid, you don't qualify for legal aid, then go through the means test of the legal aid. So I don't have anything to happen in there is going to be a specific process under the expropriation that deals with people that do not qualify in respect of legal fees. So that's a difficult one, Chairperson, to deal with, because as far as I'm concerned, in respect of the legislation, I don't know how can legislate to deal with that. Chairperson, I don't want to say I remember what the recommendation, but Chairperson. Legal aid, you qualify for legal aid, you don't qualify, or alternatively you, because it's more or less Chairperson, the challenges of the legal, the most important thing I wanted to say, Chairperson, that's one of the reasons there's that provision of mediation process. Because of the legal fees and the cost of the legal fees, you first go through the negotiations. If you fail, the negotiations fail, then the mediator that's appointed and all of that. Because we're looking into other means that are going to assist people who cannot afford the legal fees dependent. Then if it comes through, the matter be taken to court, then we follow the normal legal processes where you either oppose the legal aid or you can't afford the legal aid, or the legal aid is not offered to you for whatever reason, then unfortunately. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Also, dealing with the issue of...
Sorry, I didn't get your... I don't know.
This is welcome, Mukwena, from the National Department of Public Works, Honorable Chair. May I then address you? With permission.
Yeah, I was speaking as a politician, and I think I think it's obviously for you to decide as the chair and as the committee, but I don't want to engage politically, because obviously there's a political dimension to the bill, and I want to respect the NCOP. But I would urge your indulgence in terms of the bureaucrat in the department who's been working on it for many, many years. if they introduce political dimension, I think it's a different matter. But because of their familiarity with the bill, and they've been busy with it for many, many years, and they've been to all of the provinces assisting the provinces in their hearings as well, it's technical assistance, which I hope my colleague is about to introduce, then I beg your indulgence, because, you know, with respect to the parliamentary advisor and the state advisor, actually, the team from within the department often has an even more detailed understanding, because this has been their bread and butter for many, many years. So if we could distinguish between myself, politician, which I am, I can't deny that, of a particular stripe, and their assistance, but to rule them out of order if what they're doing is seeking to you know, influence in a political way, which of course I would be tempted to do. I hope that helps.
I just have one problem, Deputy Minister. If you motivate too strongly for it, then it looks like it's a political motivation. Let's hear you, Mr. Mokwena. Mr. Mokwena, we are comfortable. But you know the parameters.
I just wanted to highlight on the issue of the punishment Maggie described, that when you look at clause 27 of the bill, it indicates how we deal with issues of punishment in relation to the actual misconduct, for a lack of a better word, misconduct on the bill. For instance, a person who is dishonest is dealt with in clause 27, subsection 5, subclause 5. And in relation also to the issue of the legal costs, I just want to highlight to the committee, Honorable Chair, that there are organizations like the Legal Aid, as my colleague has alluded to, and the other, the Legal Resource Center, which deals with the matter of such a nature, who will greatly assist people who are indigent in this type of matters. That is my input as far as the submission is concerned, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'm just trying to link that punishment thing, the punishment reference. It says on page 22. Now I'm on page 22. Line 12 is a repeal of laws. Am I right? I hope that we have all been looking from the same draft. Oh, I'm working from the wrong draft. Can somebody who has the correct draft just try and help me answer the question that Ms. Mokwena is trying to help us with? When the Free State refers to punishment, are they covered then by the reference that Mr. Mokwena has made to the punishment and under clause 27. Please do so if it would help.
A civil court, it's section 27.2, a civil court, page 22, line 12. A civil court may impose a fine up to a maximum prescribed amount in favor of the National Revenue Fund on a person referred to in subsection 1 upon application by the expropriating authority brought on notice to the affected person.
Honourable Members, this is helpful, but what you've read, the punishment is in there. So Free State is saying that the punishment is not qualified, and it is. Right, so we agree. Then punishment is okay, we are covered by that. Let me, just before you do that, take all the other hands as well, because I want to close and let us move from Free State. I notice Honourable Father after you, and then Honourable Ntebe will have the last word on it. Please, Honourable Honourable.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just on letter Austin chapter 2 on page 6, line 51, substitute must of the minister and insert may, and I do agree on that, because I believe that the minister's power must be discretionary rather than mandatory. And I believe that then maybe our legal advisors can help us on that, but I really believe that if you look on page 6 on the Act itself, which says the minister must expropriate, and I also believe that it should be may.
Just help us on the
chapter 2 clause. They say chapter 2 on page 6, lines 52, substitute must of the minister insert may. So I agree with him on that.
Legal advice, do you have that? Okay. Continue, Honourable Father, sorry.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Is that the only one? Honourable, make a note, please, then we can come back to you. Honourable Chair.
I'm not sure. I wanted to speak on the issues of the affordability of litigation, but I think the state law advisors have captured it. I know that in the other mandate that is going to follow later, there's also that provision there. But I think the issue of substituting must with may, it's semantics, because in all fairness, the bill expressed explicitly that every expropriation process should be within the prescripts of the Constitution. So this changing of must to may is cosmetic to me. So I think we must obtain the must. Thank you, sir.
Let's not respond to. We have our experts there. They will help us. Please continue, legal team.
The person, with your indulgence, can I just read maybe the whole provision, the whole clause? It says if an organ of state other than an expropriating authority satisfies the minister that it requires the filler property for a public purpose or in the public interest, then the minister must expropriate, which means there is a provider who need to be satisfied. Then if you satisfy that the property is required for a public purpose, which is a requirement for expropriating, then you must expropriate. So there is that provider, so it's a must person.
Do you want to give us the point that Honorable Mutebe has made about the constitutional link with it?
The constitutional link to this would be the section 35 that says you expropriate for a public purpose and in a public interest. So you first specify that, you specify those, meet those requirements, not arbitrarily. So you first tick the boxes, then you must then expropriate. So you don't do it arbitrarily.
Don't worry, we'll help you. I noticed the gentleman there with the red eyes. I presume you're from Public Works as well. Please.
Chair, I think it's just to emphasize what she has just said, that if you read the provision as a whole, the 35 part of it is the discretion that the minister has once those requirements of public purpose and public interest have been met. And then once they are met, the minister must now implement the law. So there is the discretion and then the peremptory part of it after that.
So there's clear provisions.
Yes, I think they make sense.
I wouldn't ordinarily, but because it's you, it's okay. then we go south to you.
Chairperson, if you can remember correctly, I said the must stay. I also have my reservations about the must that should rather be may, because if you want to build a power line, that route may not just be that route. And if you want to build a road, it may not be the only road that you, the direction that the road has to take. So the minister can be satisfied very easily because you've got to toe the party political line. I'm sorry. So I would say may, because may gives a fair chance rather than, as my honourable colleagues have said here next to me. That's the one point. Other point, I want to move on to valuation. And what our colleague from Mpumalanga referred to, I think the value or in that regard, the properties that are not necessarily land. Because a lot of these submissions that came in refer to land specifically. And when it comes to valuer, no mention is made of the Office of the Valuer General, which is in the process of being created. But then the definition should be expanded to include the valuation of property which is not land, because that is a critical issue. Because the Office of the Valuer General, I don't know to what extent he is doing, maybe we can get advice where he can do intellectual property.
That question is raised again in the Western presentation. But because it's raised here in the Free State, first let's deal with it here. So there's two aspects. The one is the point raised by Honorable Timunia about property, and that's the need for a definition where Honorable Van Lingen now refers, for example, to intellectual property, right? And in the Western Cape presentation, they made reference particularly to patenting law, right? And how do we deal with that? The second point, so that's one, related to the definition of property. I know in the hearings that I've participated in, there was also a question raised. What is property that you're talking about? And is the definition here sufficient, also when we read it together with Clause 25 of the Constitution? That's point one. The point two, about the value. Honorable Ntebe is saying that valuation should be dropped because there is a reference to value. Now, when I listen to Honorable Van Lingen, I'm not sure. You are not against valuation being dropped because there's value already in the law. You are just emphasizing it that there has to be you. Okay. Let's leave that value apart. Let's just deal with property definition part, and because your point is not particularly against the point that was raised by Honorable Ntebe with regard to discarding the valuation here in the Free State recommendation. Anybody on my left who would want to help us just on the property definition?
With your permission, Chair, the definition of property we take to our cue from the Constitution. If you look at the manner in which it's defined, we uplifted it and the reference directly to the Constitution itself. Now, the reason why it's captured in that manner, we were guided by several constitutional court decisions, which clearly says to us that the constitutional concept of property is far much broader than the common law concept of property as we know it. And that being the case, if we were to define property in terms of the common law or private law approach, that in itself would be against the Constitution. So we opted to align ourselves to the requirements of the Constitution, because what is property is an evolving thing. Because our constitutional state is still new, types of property, new forms of property are still coming out, and what his property to the chairperson may not necessarily be property to someone, and we may need to have an arbiter in the form of a court to say, no, look, this is property for purposes of 1-3. So if you look at there has been decisions, court decisions that deals with the issues around the pension, to say a pension is a type of property. There has been, if you look at the Shoprite case, where you have a majority and a minority decision, one of the judges there was saying, no, look, the majority was saying a license to trade in liquor is property. And one minority judge said in court that, no, look, it's an entitlement that the state grants to a person to operate. It's not necessarily property. So you see there are those that different views, but in the final analysis, the judge was saying, no, a license is property. So the same court advised that actually it would be folly for us to try to define the concept of property, because we are going to bend ourselves into a corner. So I think that's why we opted to leave it as protested.
I think this will help me, but maybe it will help the other members as well. I know I've worked with Mr. Mukweda in Gauteng. If you could tell us what your portfolio is within the Department of Public Works.
I work in the section that is called property owner activities, and that deals exactly with issues around the expropriation.
Exactly. Mr. Morena.
Honorable Chair, thank you. I just wanted to add in there and just allude to this fact that what we are trying to introduce as the department is that the bill is a framework on the procedure or on the expropriation. So it is a framework that says, okay, if you want to expropriate, you look at clause 5 to 27, this is how you're going to do it. But the actual definitions of what property is, for example, if you look at a mining site, you will find out what property is in terms of the Mining and Minerals Act. For example, Water Act. That would be property. But also, when you look at the constitutional court cases, and I'll just allude to what they found that property is, for example, they said property is not stagnant, and in for example, in the FNB case, they found that what constitutes property is corporeal, movables and immovables. In the Left It Out promotion case, they found that incorporeal such as trademarks and goodwill is part of constitutional property. In the Law Society of South Africa versus the Minister of Transport, they found that a personal right to claim for medical costs and a loss of earnings against the road accident and his property. So just to give you an example of what property is, it will depend on the circumstances. It's quite difficult for us in a framework or a procedure bill to define what property is, because of this is, if you want to expropriate, this is the manner in which you must do it. But the actual how you define property, it will depend on the different types of legislation that deal with the actual property that you want to expropriate, and also looking also at the case laws that the Constitutional Court has given and the guidance that they have given, say it is not wise at this stage for constitutional dispensation to actually give an actual meaning, say this is what property is.
Let's just, before we allow you, Mr. Ngobose, sorry, Honorable Mjimune, you were the one who raised that question. Are you satisfied?
Yeah.
You are satisfied. If you wanted to motivate further, you're satisfied.
Okay, in the spirit of being helpful, okay. Really to build on what the two colleagues have just said. First of all, what we need to understand is we deal with what you're calling a framework piece of legislation, okay, or call a general law application. In other words, we've indicated that there are dozens and dozens of several pieces of legislation that empower premiers, that empower at least eight other ministers and the president, that empower all municipalities to expropriate. So what we're trying to do here is we're not trying to second guess those specific pieces of expropriation powers, nor take away those expropriation powers, but we're saying that if it's a municipality that's expropriating for a public purpose or in the public interest, then it must follow the procedures outlined here in order to be constitutionally compliant and to meet the test of administrative justice. So that's what we're trying to do. So we've got a list somewhere where we found at least 33 pieces of legislation which allow this or that minister, for instance, not public works minister, but other ministers, to expropriate for forestry purposes, for other purposes, and so on, where property for that particular purpose is defined. Okay, for a minister of agriculture, forestry, and fishery, who has powers to expropriate under the Forestry Act or something like that, then the particular kind of property that would be appropriately expropriated is defined there for the purposes of a specific act. We're dealing with the general application. That's why we've guided by the Constitution Court, which says it's unwise and impractical to try to define in general what property constitutes, particularly in an evolving new constitution. The one exception in this act, this bill, I should say, is Chapter 2, and there's often confusion about it. Chapter 2 is the chapter that deals explicitly with the powers of the Minister of Public Works. Okay, because we are seeking to repeal the 1975 Expropriation Act, which basically gives powers to the Minister of Public Works to expropriate. So we don't want to remove the powers of the Minister of Public Works to expropriate, but we want to get rid of that old apartheid era unconstitutional act. So in this act, although it's about a general process of expropriation, we do need to cover the space of what we're removing when we remove 75, but that we do retain expropriating powers for the Minister of Public Works. And when it comes to that in Chapter 2, you will see Clause 3, Subsection 3, then we define the kind of property that a Minister of Public Works could legitimately expropriate. It's connected to the provision and management of the accommodation, land, infrastructure needs of an organ of state. In other words, public works is the landlord, if you like, for public facilities and so on. So there, the appropriate property is defined. But the general bill that we're dealing with is dealing with all acts of expropriation. And therefore, we've advisedly simply relied on what the Bill of Rights, the property clause, how it talks about property in the definition. And I think that's fine because this comes up again, I know in the cutting, for instance, I know that's the one key issue. And I hope that explains what we're trying to do. We understand why people are anxious to define it. But we say it's still advised to try to define property in this general, okay? But it should be defined when one gives powers to a Minister of Public Works, specifically. The Minister of Public Works can't be appropriating forests, unless it's, for the purposes of forestry, if you understand what I'm trying to say. Okay, so hopefully that was a non-political...
It was.
That's also a good agricultural lawyer attempt to explain what we're trying to do. Yeah.
Thank you, dear. Honourable Chairman, I'm going to ask that you hold back so that we can proceed.
Thank you.
Thanks for helping me time it as well. Let's then, with your permission, honourable members, go to the isn't it? Oh, sorry. It's still confusing my parts. We go to Gauteng. Gauteng, if you will allow me to say that the document that I have here says that the Gauteng Provincial Legislature supports the principle and the detail of the bill with the proposed amendments. So they support the principle and the detail of the proposing amendments. Now, if we can go to the amendments. It's the last page 5. proposed amendments on the expropriation bill started taking into consideration the concerns raised by the stakeholders during Comodinate public hearings. There we have the definition of property that you have dealt with already for us. To state in our uncertain terms the categories of property that may be expropriated or protected. So I think that we are basically protected. Sorry, we are covered. As Gauteng. Are there any questions on the Gauteng presentation? Okay, let's then move to Limpopo. It's a topographical error. Which has been done. They've given us a definition of property. Sorry, I put these things in the file myself and I'm not that good. Let's look at KZN. Are you here? Who's presenting KZN for us? No. I'm from Gauteng. I know what we did. KZN. Can somebody please assist us on KZN?
Chair, the mandate from KZN is before you. The legislator is urging us to consider the following submission. Day 22, clause 29, that we must inspect the following. 29, subsection 3, whenever any legislation provides for the expropriation of the road or railway by means of proclamation thereof in the provincial or government gazette, such method of expropriation may be exercised, subject to the provision of the Act in relation to public interest, determination of compensation and dispute resolution, save for the aforementioned, in the event of any other conflict between this Act and the legislation authorizing expropriation of roads or railway by proclamation. This Act prevails. And the submission that the committee agreed to mandate the KwaZulu-Natal delegation, the NCOP, to support the bill, provided the above concern are considered and consolidated to the bill. There is presented. Thanks.
Senator Mutere, for helping us out there. Any members want to comment on the document that we received from KZN? Honourable Van Lingen, Eddie, if there's other hands? No. Honourable Van Lingen, please proceed.
Chairperson, firstly, this mandate is dated the 29th of April, so it's after the bill is gone. Secondly, on the back of the page, it says the committee agreed to mandate the KZN delegation to the National Council of Provinces to support the bill provided,
right,
and consolidated in the bill. In other words, they are in support of this bill, provided that it is included, subsection 29(3), as proposed by them.
Okay. Legal minds, do you have that same interpretation of the provided in that mandate? It's just the interpretation of provided.
I have a limited interpretation.
Hold it. Do you? Are we together on what we're trying to address?
The provided sentence is a conditional, not approval support, conditional support. So it's dependent on obviously it's dependent on the committee taking in the suggested or the recommended changes.
So you agree that if the changes are not
in the final draft and we don't have a mandate.
That's what it means. Then we have a mandate, but they are not supporting. If because you're saying I'm supporting, provided you taking in the you taking in the recommendations, sir.
Okay. Honourable members, can I then ask you, what do you think of that proviso, Honourable Tebe? Let's see if there's anybody else. Honourable Tebe, okay.
Chair, in this case, the proviso do not. I want to assume this is not an attempt to instruct us what to do. We agreed earlier when we started with the meeting that the legislature has done their part. It is our part as a select committee to also do our part. So we exercise our honorable delegation to exercise whatever right we want to take based on what the provinces are saying. But the provinces cannot tell us what to do. That's my understanding. So we are here. This is why this process is called negotiating mandate. There's an acceptance that not everything that is being submitted will be part of the deal.
No. Hold on for a minute. I've looked at that underlined part on
yes.
page one.
Yes.
Of the case there.
Yes.
I see no problem with that. What is the problem?
No, I'm still coming there to say there's no, the issue that they are raising here, it's captured in the act. It is there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the proviso part of it is neither here nor there.
No. They are saying proviso, provided. Now, I'm saying that it is in the act. So, the provision that they are making is covered.
But there must
to use
be,
that term.
But there must not be an attempt to say the KwaZulu-Natal is not supporting the bill.
Yes. That is not what you're saying. One more for a minute.
When a province says that it is the clause they want, I can remember from the fourth parliament that if a specific clause is like that and it is their proviso on it or subject to, then it means unless that particular clause is inserted like that, there is no mandate to support the bill from that province. Now,
can we ask that as might be the criteria that we take that hotel? My understanding is that this is not a final mandate from KZN. It's not a final mandate. It's only a negotiating mandate.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. Which is card. Let's hear from the legal advice. But you've given us an opinion on it, haven't you? Yeah. They've given us the opinion. No, that's not what they're saying. They're saying they agree with you, Honorable Funder. They agree with you that proviso means that they were only supported in that particular clause. Now, I'm saying that clause is cut in the bill as it stands at the moment. No, it's not written as they are asking, but it is covered in the book. There's no clause in that that's contradicted in the book. Okay, let's hear from the lawyers then.
So, Mr. Mayor, let me qualify what I said, or unpack what I said. Provided servicing, this has been considered and consolidated, which means the committee needs to look into whether this is already in the bill. If it's already in the bill, you consider, then it's in the bill, then it's contained in the bill, which means then it's in support. So, it's consolidated, it's in the bill, the president. So, the provide means it ought to be in the bill, then if it's not in the bill, then it's not in the bill, but if it is, then it's the province is in support, person.
Let me ask you a question directly. That underlying part that they have here, is that provided for in the bill?
Yes, it's written not those words, not in those words, Chairperson. Yes.
Right. Now we have the lawyer telling us. Now you must believe him.
He's a lawyer. It's a lawyer.
Right. Now a lawyer is told that
you happened. Put two lawyers in a room and you have five opinions.
Right. We will, Honourable Fernandez, because it is only the negotiated mandate, we're going to go back to KZN and tell them that what they've raised is indeed covered in the model. It's a KZN decision to make. And we will tell them that that is the position from our lawyer. They're free to consult another lawyer. If they feel that it's not been covered, they're free to do that. We are not going to make the decision for the province. Yes, please. You may.
Yes, listen. I think, okay, and vaguely I can remember, and maybe the secretary can help us. One of the provinces applied for an extension on submissions. And I'm not sure whether it was KZN that, in all fairness, I see this thing was submitted on the 28th. I'm not sure that it was KZN that applied for the extension. And I know that they've written to Honourable Nyambi, who's the chairperson of committees. I also know that only the chairperson of the NCOP can grant that position, of that extension. So my question to you is, has this been tabled with the chairperson of the NCOP, and can we have a copy of her written approval of such extension?
The extension issue, I thought, has been covered with the first part of the conversation that we have had. No, whether it happens officially or not, we are only dealing with the final. We're dealing with the final mandates on the 10th of May. No tensions on that. Right? Let's then go to the next province, which is Mpumalanga. Honourable...
thank you, Mayor.
Sorry,
ma'am.
KZN, Limpopo.
Limpopo,
please.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Honorable Fanini. You're from Limpopo. Yeah, so listen to what Limpopo is saying. Order, Honorable Members. Recommendations from Limpopo. The committee, having interacted with the NCOP Department of Public Works and Stakeholders, would like to recommend that the President should establish expropriation commission to expedite the expropriation of land in South Africa. The bill should insert a paragraph to enhance the MDCH Act to be the principal act of other existing legislation implemented by other expropriating authorities. When notice of intention to expropriate has been served, services of the state railway should be employed to establish a reasonable amount of compensation for property as contemplated. Time frames for negotiations and mediation should be included in the bill. The capacity of the department to implement the bill should be given serious consideration, informed by need for land all over the country. All expropriating authorities should be seen to be exercising power entrusted on them. Municipalities must be entrusted with power to expropriate as most of the properties are found at the municipal level. Traditional authorities, listen to this one, Honorable Fanini. Traditional authorities should be entrusted with expropriating authority as they exercise public power. Exclusions for expropriation should be included in the regulation to be made by the Minister in terms of Section 28, Subsection 1. There must be a review of Trespassing Act to facilitate expropriation. Now, the negotiated mandate. The Portfolio Committee, having considered and made recommendations on the bill, hereby confer a negotiating mandate to the National Council of Provinces, eminent delegates, to negotiate in favor of the bill. Thank you.
Honourable members, help me this with the interpretation. If I look at the recommendations, I think that out of the 10 recommendations, there may just be 4 that we need to discuss. The others are basically saying that they support what's in the bill. The 4 that they make a reference to, the first one is 6.4, where they're talking about the time frames for negotiation and mediation. The second one is 6.8, where they refer to traditional authorities and their power to expropriate. The next is 6.9, where they're talking about exclusions and refer to Section 28.1 of the Act. And then the final one is to request that the Trespassing Act also be reviewed. Honourable Mjimunya, Honourable Tebe, anybody of the other honourable members want to see? Honourable Nita, let's have you. And we're looking towards our legal team because some of the things that's raising there are also very legalistic. Honourable Mjimunya, please proceed.
Thank you. The one point, the first point I want to address, Mr. Tu, with regard to this mandate on the book, is the issue of the time frame around the negotiating, consultation, and stuff. Does that have any relevance to the actual bill, or does it have relevance to the actual procedures act? I'm not sure, but I think it's relevant to the Procedures Act, to be raised powers and proofs. What is the act now? Is that me? The one that governs the issue of form legislation. Powers and Privileges Act. I think that is the act that needs to be amended in terms of, because from our own provinces where this matter of the time period allocated to provinces has been raised as a concern that the time frame or the period is rather too short. The other one, second point, Jay, is the issue of the bill now giving power to my traditional authority to also expropriate. Maybe if I were to wear my other cap as a civic activist. No, we can't shun away from the fact that has been conflicted in this country around the issue of land allocation, land expropriation, and so on. And this conflict has been centered around the issue, between the communities themselves and the traditional authority and the municipalities. I think this bill also must also assist us now to deal with that particular conflict, although there is a resolution mechanism captured in the bill itself. Without mentioning these three parties that have been in conflict historically around this particular question. But I'm not sure if we want to do that now, to confer powers to the traditional authority to expropriate. I'm not sure if we are ready.
Can I ask that if we make a contribution, we express an opinion? It's your right as a member of parliament to express an opinion, to say that we see a traditional authorities we don't think. I think that you are not coming over clearly to me on the matter.
I'm not on the fence. I'm not from the township, I'm from a village.
I avoided saying that you're on the fence. I'm trying to say, Honourable Mjimunya, because I think that it is important that we should respect each other's position on the matter, that you should say, what do you think?
No, the fact that I'm opposed to this proposal of conferring powers to traditional authorities does not suggest that I don't respect traditional authorities as a village body.
Honourable Taylor?
I think being from one of the rural provinces, that is part of the issue that when we get to the Northwest is going to be explicit. But in our case, and I'm not sure if we can adequately be able to persuade Makosh. In our case, we the Northwest mandate is saying the traditional leadership because they form part of the bigger decision-making body of the province. They must become part of the decision-making process. It means that they become part of the stakeholder engagement in the process to meet them. So I'm not sure if it's adequate to address what Makoshi is raising. That if you are going to be going to a rural province like Limpopo in the Northwest, you can't shy away from that reality. The other issue is that in our first panel we were discussing the draft bill. We also indicated the possibility of the trespassing act. And we said where there are difficulties, DM to sort of get an easy entrance into whatever property, how do we go about doing the repealing of the trespassing act might be one option, but we are looking into a possibility of a process that is not going to be consumed by hostilities. And in a normal process where there are no hostilities, then this process is going to be normal. But where there are hostilities, it's going to be problematic, because you would need to go through a process of litigation for you to be able to get access conferred to you by the court of law, because we are a constitutional democracy, and such issues are time-consuming on their own. So it might be a possibility, Chair, but from where I'm sitting, with the intent and the purpose of the bill, I think we must trust that things are going to be smooth. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Mitchell, before you,
thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I want to start as well to 6.8 and declare upfront I am an urban person. I'm not from the rural community, but rest assured I've been interacting with such issues in my responsibility as a politician. Chair, I also agree with those that say, as of now, we are not ready for this particular point that is being proposed of by the traditional leader, that they be given an authority. And Chair, it's true that we have been having serious problems on the issue of land between traditional leaders and government general, to the extent that it gets to delay the service delivery in some areas. So it is a matter that we can start engaging on. That's my proposal, Chair. And also on 6.10, I just need clarity to that, Chair. This issue of trespassing acts does refer to trespassing in terms of taking land without the proper procedures to be followed. If it means that, I will be in agreement with them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Van Lennon. Let me have you as the last one. Honourable Chair, can I ask you to just hold the chair for a few minutes, please?
You, Chairperson, I don't, in terms of section 6.1 of the recommendations, I think the Expropriation Commission is a no-no. It's a no-no. We're not even going to go there. Then, in terms of 6.7 and 6.8, my understanding of this bill is that the minister will be the only one and that can finally expropriate any property. So you want to say that the traditional leaders and the municipalities can do so. The other organs of state approach the minister. If the minister is satisfied, then he always handles the case, the argument earlier on in our debate. And we said that if the minister is satisfied, he can expropriate he must expropriate. We discussed the clause between May and March. So anybody can now all of a sudden expropriate.
And secondly,
the Trespassing Act, I can't see why that must be and to what extent that must now be implemented or revised, because
I initially understood that when a person has to evaluate a specific property, that person must have access to do so. That's what I thought. But to what extent are we opening up the door for land invasion? Because it must not allow for that. So we've got to be very careful that we do not open unfair practices that can affect property as an unintended consequence.
Because it comes from your province, you can have philosophy.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to try and say something from point 6.8. I really understand those who are not from the rural areas, what they're saying, because they don't know the practical part of it. But what Honorable Teresa said, that we must make sure that the traditional leaders are part of the decision making. I think that one makes sense to me. Because anything without the traditional leaders, it will never work in the rural areas. You can think about Spluma. Hey, where it is now? It's not working. Because the traditional leaders were not part of this. So even on this one, well, we can exercise whatever rights we have, but when it comes to the traditional leaders, it will never work without them. Thank you, Chairperson.
Let me, just before I give the Deputy Minister and the members your response on that 6.8, we have constitutionally provided for three spheres of government. But, Honorable Dikhala, there is a constitutional recognition for traditional leaders in clause 211. Of the Constitution, Chapter 12, where it's very clearly spelled out what are the constitutional spaces and expectations from traditional leaders. And particularly if we look at Chapter 12, Section 212, it talks about the role of traditional leaders. And in that, if I just read for you 2b, it says, national legislation may establish a council. Sorry, let me read 2A. National or provincial legislation may provide for the establishment of a house of traditional leaders. And we have such a house. And it also says in D, may establish a council of traditional leaders. And we have the National Council of Traditional Leaders. What's very clear is that there has to be consultation with all affected parties when it comes to lease of land. But what we are not saying is that the Act must not provide exclusively complete. The Act must provide exclusively for the powers of traditional leaders in the expropriation law. Because my reading is that this Chapter 12 already provides for such consultation with the traditional leadership. Otherwise we'd have to say, as other organizations develop, that we'll have to include them as well. That's my opinion. I'm not speaking as a chair, I'm just speaking as a member. And let's have the experts that can help us on that. Let's have the Deputy Minister, then we'll have Mr. Wern, and we'll have Mr. Mokwena.
Okay, I'm not an expert, but just to really make the point I was making earlier in a different form, appropriate to the issues that are coming. What we're trying to do in this bill, in this piece of legislation, is not to give expropriating powers to anyone that doesn't have them, nor to take away expropriating powers to anyone, any sphere of government, any minister, any province that already has them. There's
a range of pieces of legislation, as Rahib's saying. At the national level, we've debated at least 33 pieces of legislation, forestry, etc., 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 where expropriative powers are given to specific ministers in regard to specific areas of competence and requirement where they can expropriate. Not taking away those powers, nor are we giving the powers, but what we are saying is when you expropriate, this act must guide as a framework how you proceed when you expropriate. Okay. So whether traditional leaders should have expropriating powers, which is the proposal here, is a matter that can't be driven through this piece of legislation driven by the Department of Public Works. That's a discussion that needs to happen, through COTA basically, needs to be led through that ministry, and the discussion may or may not result in agreeing that there should be expropriating powers given to traditional leaders, which they don't have currently. Okay. So I don't think we should get into the merits or otherwise of that debate because that's not what we're about in this piece of legislation. Okay. However, what other colleagues, including your health chairperson, have said is absolutely right, that all affected parties absolutely must be consulted. And that's the reassurance we get because we have met with the House traditional leaders extensively with full days meeting and so on. And we've also had in the portfolio committee hearings, Humphrey Lesser and others coming to present. So just to give that a reassurance, but also not to overstep responsibility. And the same would apply to the Trespassing Act. First of all, the Trespassing Act, if I understand it correctly, is basically protecting property against trespass and therefore illegal invasion, but we know that trespassing does happen in reality. Now we again, as the Department of Public Works, can't amend the Trespassing Act. I think falls under the Minister of Justice, if I'm not mistaken. So just again to understand, we're not unsympathetic to anything that is said here, particularly we're not necessarily unsympathetic to 6.8 or to 6.10, but it's not the purpose of what we're trying to achieve. So I hope that reassures the delegate from the Mpopo that we hear what is said here. But it would be an overreach on our part to do, to try and act in this piece of legislation to amend the trespass. We can't. And the same would be to conserve powers or take away powers from traditional leaders. We can't do that in this piece of legislation.
Thank you, Jim. Maybe just to allude to the specific provisions that the Minister referred to, if you look at Clause 1, the definition of expropriating authority, it says it means an organ of state or a person empowered by this act or any other legislation to acquire property through expropriation. So it's an organ of state empowered through any other legislation. So this legislation, when you go to this legislation, you go to Clause 3 that says if an organ of state other than an expropriating authority, so Clause 3 deals with organs of state other than expropriating authorities as defined. So that is really when these expropriations take place, it must be in terms of this, the procedure that this act brings into place.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mukwena, do you want to add?
Thank you, sir. I will not add any further. I think the Honourable Deputy Minister has addressed it.
Very much. I'm becoming worried about our time now. You may.
Thank you, Chair. The Minister has on several occasions, the Deputy Minister, but I'll be kind because I want something. Nothing comes for nothing. The Deputy Minister has referred a couple of times to the fact that he submitted this to the National House of Traditional Leaders. What submissions have they made? Because we haven't seen any documents or what were their responses. Because if you look at the Northwest submissions that they have, they're not quite happy with what is being said and what is being done and being recognized. And yeah, Honorable Dikhali wants to have the rights, which means they are not quite happy. They're not quite happy with the situation and the fact that it has not been referred to the traditional leaders in every province. So my question is, what was the response of the National House of Traditional Leaders, and can we have a copy of that? And when was the meeting? What is the next slide?
You
see, I don't want to open up that conversation. But let's have Honorable Ntebe, and I'm going to rule on it.
This is a total misrepresentation of what Northwest Submission says. The Northwest Submission says, we, the House of Traditional Leadership in the Northwest, would want to be part of the stakeholder engagements moving forward. And we are, at all material hands, happy to engage in the process moving forward. That's what the submission says. The submission also said, because we are a traditional House of Traditional Leadership, we have other properties outside of the parameters of a definition of property. Please explain to us. Section 25, Subsection 4B of the Constitution is explicit. It says property is not limited to land. Thank you, sir.
My ruling on this would be that I will check with the Portfolio Committee if any submissions have been made to them. Submissions were not made to the Department, but to the Committees of Parliament. Are you here, Shamila? Shamila has just gone out. But can we ask you, Grace, to just check the Portfolio Committee?
Yes, correct. Sorry to interrupt. I mean, basically, this is a Section 36 bill, and therefore our responsibility as the lead department in the process is to bring the bill to both the National Assembly and via the Portfolio Committee and to the NTOD for provincial mandates and the process we're involved in. There's no obligation, but it was as a matter of courtesy that we spent a day with the House of Traditional Leaders, purely a matter of courtesy, because we recognise the importance of thing. Then initially, as you correctly said, there were submissions from a couple of traditional House leaders, as well as from different provinces, as well as from contributing into the Portfolio Committee meeting, and hopefully the Portfolio Committee meeting has kept a full feedback records, obviously, of the submissions that they made and of the minutes. So, to show you, but there was no legal obligation in terms of the process to formally go to the House of Traditional Leaders, but we did so as a matter of courtesy, and so, and that was prior to the tabling of this bill. In other words, it was in the process of hearing what key stakeholders had to say about it. So it was,
Thank you very much. Mpumalanga, can we go to you now, please?
Then, sir, we go to be very short. In terms of the negotiating mandate, dated 28 April 2016, signed by the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Public Works, Roads and Transport, Committee Safety, Security and Liaison, Honorable Kasile Shabalala. The mandate reads as follows, Chair, on the expropriation bill. The Portfolio Committee on Public Works, Roads and Transport, Community Safety, Security and Liaison supports the expropriation bill 4B of 2015 and confers on the permanent delegates representing the province of Mpumalanga and the National Council Provinces the mandate to vote in favor of the bill without any proposed amendments. So it sounds in context as a final mandate. It is, however, a negotiating mandate.
Thank you very much. You may, Honorable Khalanga.
It is dated the 28th of April. It is beyond the due date.
We note your comment, with which we disagree. Let's go to the next front. Northern Cape, Honorable Father, are you leading us on the front, please?
Thank you, Chair. The committee of the Northern Cape, the Portfolio Committee, they, from what we understand here, I'm going to say that they support the bill. But the committee on the adoption of the bill, which was signed, recommends to the House to mandate the delegate, which is me, participate in the deliberations at the negotiating stage and to support the bill. And that part we must understand. Taking note of the comments and the recommendations raised by the committee, as well as the inputs of the public. Now, if we go to the inputs of the public, the first one generally made a comment by the public is that the word property must be properly defined in the bill. Clear time frames in the terms of compensation must be clearly outlined in the bill. No interest amount is indicated in the bill. between the time of receiving notice of expropriation and the actual expropriation, there is no time frame as to who is responsible for the keep-up of the property. On urgent expropriation, how does a person show damages and who is responsible for the levies? What happens in an instance where there is a dispute and the property is used as mean of income? The word expropriation must also be debated. Then it says the bill is silent on projected income. The bill does not say which local authority will deal with expropriation issues. Fine grants must be set to companies in events where the land needs rehabilitation. The definition of public interest should be looked into and also clearly stated that the word public interest is not to be defined in the context of ideological interest or ulterior motives. The accrual or interest during the consultative processes should be addressed. Do not allow for interest accrual due to the fact that disputes may arise thereby, delaying the process and resulting in more being paid ultimately. Provide for time frames when and how rates and taxes should be paid by owners. Reconsider time frames that trust to communicating with persons in rural areas in terms of administration and documentation. The beneficiation of upcoming farmers is not clearly stated in the bill. The issue of municipal residential land should be considered for inclusion in the bill. Concern was raised regarding guarantees of property subject to mortgage and deal of sale as contained in clause 80, and the law is not clear about compensation for the loss of property to farmers in respect for future alternative business ventures. The bill should be specific regarding compensation for rural and urban land, and clause 21 is given much power to the expropriating authority. Both parties must have equal powers. So that is in the general comments that was made by the public. And then if you look at the committee inputs, it notes that most of the inputs were contained in the bill. The committee requests that the amount of interest rates must be stated in the bill, and clause 21 to be amended so that both parties are entitled to refer the matter to court. I think that is already also addressed. I think that's it.
Thank you very much, Honourable Father. My reading of it, Honourable Members, is there where we look at the committee inputs. The committee notes that most of the inputs made by the community and public are contained in the bill. So what they've done is that they captured for us what was raised and captured in the bill. And then they are making one request to us, that the amount of interest. Now, remember these people speak Tswana and Afrikaans and what's the other language that they speak there? And therefore when they say the amount of interest rate stated in the bill, they basically saying that you understand what they say. Then clause 21, they're asking that be amended, and as has been said by Honourable Fab already, that is basically covered. So we're sitting with the two matters there. The input made by, we're sitting with one matter, which is the middle one. The amount of interest rate be stated in the bill. Can you have a comment on that and then we go to the next one? Do we need to give you more time to reflect on that? Can we go to the next one? And then we can come in. Honourable Nita and Honourable Panlanga.
I think I agree with you. Let's pack this one and move to the next one and allow them time to be able to consult with each other. Thank you.
Honourable Panlanga.
Chairperson.
I raised the interest issue earlier on, of the fact that where do you decide, because if a transaction, a property transaction fails, it must stop. There should not be interest. Otherwise, that sword is going to dangle over this individual who is the owner of the land forever. Now, some of these submissions say the owner should be off in a similar position as what that owner has been before the transaction. Do you understand what I'm saying? So first of all, the owner can lose a huge amount of money in a legal court case that they cannot really afford, but they want to keep the land, or there is a difference about pricing. Secondly, I can remember Mr. Mayron clearly saying that in the case of a father giving a bond to his son, it can be out of line. I do not buy that one, because that is the fair value of the property will determine. But when it comes to the banks and the money owed and everything, you can't, you pay, when I have a bond and I have an expropriation coming, I will stop producing because there's an uncertainty. I won't stop plowing again. I won't have input costs again. Do you understand? So there is loss of income. But we've got to, this is a nightmare. It is, the interest that they refer to here, I would not even put in. But if it has to be put in, it must refer to the repo rate and etc. So it is a long story that needs proper wording if you want to go that way. Again, I said it should fall flat on its face.
Are there any?
I'm now seriously getting worried. We still have to do 36. Can I ask you to be brief, please, on double check?
So my understanding is that expropriation itself is a process. Part of the determination of the interest rate and all other issues that are part of the expropriation are the issues that are going to be extensively considered by the valuate responsible. And these issues cannot be left outside because they are part of avoiding being arbitrary in the process of expropriation. So I want to urge you that this matter is neither here nor there, but we can take it at another level. Thank you, sir.
I think the answer was given to us in the original briefing. In the original briefing, it was indicated that there has been consultations with the four major banks in the country. And question related to mortgages and bonds were discussed with them. Because the fear that was addressed during the original briefing by the Department of Public Works was that what we feared would happen is that property owners would increase the value of their property when they know that expropriation was imminent, and then take out the bond on that. And therefore the answer, I think it was the minister himself who provided the answer, to say that if a financial institution has been irresponsible in how it has made monies available, conversations have been had with them to say that be careful how you make it available. Therefore, in terms of the bonds, that's covered. I think in terms of the interest, the question that's being raised is not very clear. What exactly are we talking of here when we talk about interest? The general understanding is that property has been expropriated, someone needs to be paid, and that payment doesn't happen in time. Would there be an interest due to that original owner of the property on that delay in the transfer of the price of that property to the person.
On both Lingen policemen.
It doesn't help me if I try and summarize the proceedings and I come to summarizing, then you raise your hand again. Raise your questions once, then we can deal with them. Please raise your question, madam.
Chairperson, the fact that the minister told us what the negotiations were with the four major banks or whatever, that is hearsay. Nobody from the banking association submits anything before us. So you cannot do that.
They have made submissions to the portfolio committee.
Exactly. They're not the NCOP. We have to.
Why don't you make a submission to the NCOP?
Because we have to satisfy our mind that we are putting through proper legislation. And I'm telling you, sir, we're going to have problems with the bankers and the banking investors.
Thank you very much for that opinion.
Chairperson, again, sorry to intervene, but two things. First of all, there's the mortgage bond issue, okay, and I do believe that we sorted that out. But what we're dealing here with is interest on compensation. If I understand correctly, what the Northern Cape is asking for is that in this piece of legislation, we should include an indication of what the interest rate would be on, presumably, on deferred payment of compensation. That's covered in Section 13. What we're saying, and all orders of state are governed in terms of interest, whether it's on compensation or other matters, by the PFMA. And as the Honourable Funnin correctly said, the repo rate and the guidance provided in terms of what interest is appropriate shifts and moves from time to time, and therefore the state has to be done. So it's the PFMA and its fluctuations in terms of interest rates due in terms of compensation. And that's what's discovered in 13. So I think it would be inappropriate again in the year of 2016, if we get this done by 2016, to say that the interest rate must be 15% or something. It's inappropriate and would in fact be problematic in terms of the PFMA as well. And I'm sure the Honourable Funnin agrees, being an issue of the resources. I'm sure she
other because you brought that from the province. If you give your province feedback on Section 13, would that answer the concerns that were raised?
Honourable Chair, you're making it difficult because I can't make assumptions. It's difficult to make assumptions here and assume what was said there. So I want to agree with Honourable Alpha van Lingen on that. And, you know, for me it's difficult really to make an assumption on what was said here, because I was not at those hearings and I was not at that committee meeting. So I can't, as Northern Cape come and sit and make an assumption on what was said.
Thank you very much. Honourable Timunye, I'll have you as the last one on this, and we go to Western Cape.
I also want to address the issue of procedure. If a letter must go back to province, is it the responsibility of a member of this committee coming from that province, whom in my view may not even be a head of delegation? Can we agree on a process that if a matter has referred to a province, let that matter go to a provincial delegation meeting, and the provincial delegation shall make a determination to how to take that matter forward?
You are quite right. The only reason why I raised it is that I'm trying to be fair to the delegates from provinces that are here, because they do represent the province in this committee. Therefore, I dealt with it in that way. Honourable members, can we go to Western Cape? Oh, Northwest. Sorry. Northwest?
Chair, the negotiating mandate is before you. The province is conferring the mandate to the delegates to negotiate in favour of the bill, taking into account the following recommendation. One is that the bill must attempt to address the issue where the state is the trustee of the property. Probably the department will alert us whether this is adequately captured. The second part is that how do we then maintain the delicate balance between acquisition and compensation so that we don't allow the relapse of time remaining between where there's going to be incurrence of cost on the part of any party involved.
You've just lost me. Can we speak to the document and tell us where you are in the document?
I'm galloping because I'm trying to save your time.
But tell us where we are in the document. Because we don't want you to raise new things.
Oh, okay. I'm intimidated. Chair, the first part is your cover page, which indicates the mandate. The second one, if you turn it over, is written on top, attachment to negotiating mandate on the expropriation bill. And I dealt with point number 1, 2, and I was on number 3. Do you allow me? The other issue here is how do you deal with the issue of the private property issue, which I think, in my view, has been covered to a large extent. An issue that has already been covered, which is point 4, of the description of the word property, that property according to 25.4.B is not limited to property. And section 17 talks about expropriation which must be paid. And this is what Honorable Lincoln made earlier, that the intent and purpose of expropriation is not to leave the body or the party other than the state to be less in a less position than he was before the expropriation. So that this matter has been dealt with. The point number 6, the bill is silent on compensation for property that was received during the apartheid era, whereby owners were disposed of their land. The bill should at least cover instances whereby the land had to be compensated if one that was forcibly taken away from the original owners. I think this also was covered at one point. The issue of the point 7 is the traditional leadership, which we think we have adequately addressed with Limpopo, we are agreeing. The issue of the evaluator general. The province is of the view that we must give more content into the role and the clarity to the role of the evaluator general and evaluator general. And the issue of the mediation. This is one of the issues that I indicated earlier, said also in our negotiating mandate discovered. That the province is of the view that people who are literally poor would not be able to afford the process of taking the legal route, but it has been adequately covered by the state law advisors. That is the shortened part of it.
Honorable Chair, if I hear you properly, after every presentation you'd said that's covered. So would I be correct to assume that the only one that you'd want us to discuss here is number 8? Can we get somebody from the National Department to just give us that answer on the role of the evaluator general? Because I think it is covered in the Act. Sorry, in the bill. Yeah.
I think just in regard to 1, can the state expropriate, can one body of the state expropriate from another body of the state? It's undesirable. And generally, we believe expropriation to be undesirable. That's why, a willing seller, willing buy approach is the best approach. It's more effective and so on. But yes, the answer to that is one body of the state can expropriate from another, provided they are an expropriating authority. The value general, just very quickly deal on that, because I think it comes up in a number of the other mandates as well. I think that's a piece of legislation that's been driven by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. Okay. And we obviously were in discussions with them a great deal around the implications of that, their process and our process with expropriation. Originally, the version of their bill was that the valuer general would be responsible for all valuations where the state is involved in purchase, leasing in, leasing out, and so on. We pointed out to them that, and it would be obligatory, that valuation would have been obligatory in cases of expropriation. That would be unconstitutional. People must have a right to go to court if they have a problem with compensation. You can't. And what we envisage here is also a two-year frame, a negotiated process around compensation. And therefore, a capacitated state value general would be of great value, obviously, to the state, because often we don't have an effective capacity in that regard.
But first of all, it's an office that is still just being set up. Secondly, there's huge amounts of transactions, property transactions, that, like to say, for instance, the Department of Public Works is involved in. We use our own valuation capacity, and we're needing to strengthen it. We appreciate that. So we think that any specific reference in this bill to the Valuer General as the fount of all wisdom for the state, if eventually that can happen. So we've been reluctant to do that, bearing in mind also that it's still kind of very in its infant stages. Okay. So that would be the response. The one in regard to one, and in regard to eight value general.
I'm okay.
Thank you very much. Can we then go to Western Cape? Let me read it to you. The first page is a vote of the legislature. The Standing Committee on Transport and Public Works reports that it confers on the Western Cape's permanent delegate in the NCO with this authority to support the bill with the attached proposed amendments. There is a long list of amendments. I will, for ease of reading and because it has been made available timeously to us, just one highlight. 1.1 is the term legal disability, that they say is an ambiguous term. They reference 1.2 on clause 25 for B, that property is not limited land. We've had that conversation. Then the definition of property, still under 1.2, we've dealt with that. The definition of valuer, they say only relates to the valuation of land. Now, Honourable Van Linden, we'll just have to hear from you on that. I think that has been covered, but let's hear how the other members feel about that now. That's 1.3, particularly on the valuer. 1.4, definition of expropriation is too vague. Should be defined as in section 25.2. They said that the constitution is the highest law. So I think we covered on that, right? Clause 3.2, the minister may be satisfied that the particular property is required. Therefore, it is submitted that the wording should state may instead of must. We've had our conversation on that as well. Subclause 5.7, subclause 5.2 applies an expropriation authority a person with necessary skills to enter upon a property. The survey, dig and bore, subclause 7 provides for repairs. It does not specify the standard of repair. So that's the point there, the standard of repair. Clause 7, subclause 7.2, owner and holder of a right. Tell me, honorable members, were there no members of the Department of Public Works with the Western Cape legislature? Were these questions raised with Public Works?
Yes, no, they're certainly the team from Public Works extensively covered. There were about four or five hearings in the Western Cape, public hearings.
Okay. No, then I'm happy that there has been engagement with the provincial legislation on it. Let's deal with, we're still going to deal with it. Subsection 7.2H, 4.1. The 30 days is inadequate, so we've dealt with that one, right? No. We'll deal with it now. Section 7.5, submissions is provision authority to provide affected persons with reasons. That isn't dealt with. I mean, that's very clear. So we don't need to worry about that one. 4.3, with expropriation will only be reviewed within reasonable time. It says that the expropriation should be revealed within reasonable time. I think we've dealt with it. That's covered in the act. Clause 8, I'm now at 5.1. it is important that there is certainty to what portion of land is being expropriated. That have been taught. Right. Let's read 5.2. It says the bills do not give expropriation authorities any guidance regarding the appropriate paperwork for the transfer of ownership and possession. Let's just speak on the transfer of ownership. I know it is covered in the Act, but let's refer that. Let's convince ourselves. It is admitted that the bill should, 5.3, it is admitted that the bill should clarify as to what portion of land that we have dealt with as well. Clause 9, subsection 9.1, I'm under 6.1 now. This subclause provides that ownership of the expropriated property rests in the expropriation authority on the date of expropriation contained in the expropriation right. This places great pressure on the expropriated owner to accept the compensation offered. Okay, let's just talk to that and give some, because I've seen it very somewhere else, and I think it is wrong. It doesn't put them under pressure necessarily. But let's just look at what the Act bill says on that. Then I'm at 6.3. The subclause provides two options. The last sentence there, this is a conflict with section 26.3 of the Constitution. That's very important for us. Team on my left, please give us a certainty that it does not contradict the Constitution. Mr. Norval? Sorry. What was it? Are you with us, madam? You and Mr. Hoon, on that 6.3, on page 3 of Western Cape. Okay, let's go to 6.4. The subclauses are going to raise a burden upon the expropriated owner and could result in them being expected to do more than they have been doing, as covered. Subsection 9.3, when interpreting these two propositions, they revere to contradict each other. 9.3 and 9.5, are they contradicting each other? Point 7 in the presentation, subclause 12.1, it leaves the power to determine market value in the hands of the expropriation authority. Subclause 17.1, we're talking about mediation. Subclause 17.1, based on which possession of the expropriation process is granted as a transfer. I can't see what the question is there. May expropriate or may require payment of their compensation before they are able to find. They say it would be more, it may be more appropriate for compensation to be paid at an earlier stage. To secure suitable alternative accommodation. Okay, we'll deal with that one. Clause 18.9.1. Let's not try and elicit the responses now. It's a question that they're raising, so let's... Furthermore, expropriated owners, I'm at 9.1, the last sentence there. Expropriated owners may then be left without a house and still having to pay financial institutions for the outstanding amount owed. Let's speak to that. Then 9.2, clause 20, the creator. This creates an extra administrative interest. Subclause 18.2. They didn't say what it is. But they say subclause 18.2 creates an administrative interest on the expropriated holder. See, we're not here to discuss these things. They're not making any recommendation. Clause 21, in the event when an owner of the property is opposed to the expropriation of the said property and is not financially empowered to approach a competent court to propose expropriation, the state should provide necessary and reasonable funds. That we have dealt with. 11.1, clause 22, this clause deals with urgent expropriation, and it is admitted that express provision is made in this clause on which state the expropriation authority may take possession of the property. It is submitted that express provision is made in this clause on which date expropriation authority may take possession of the property. If it makes sense to anybody, try and answer it. It doesn't make sense to me. Clause 22.6, degree of repair. We've dealt with that in the earlier part. We'll deal with the two of them together in the answers. Clause 28, it is saying the Promotion of Justice and the Administration Act of 2000 and the regulations made thereunder. Can we, with doing justice to this and due consideration of the time, there is no delegate from Western Cape in the meeting that can help us to highlight which matters are most important to them. I think that there is nothing that screams at me from what they are raising here, but let's leave it over to the members there to try and help us answer the presentation to this committee made by the Western Cape. What we are not going to do, Honourable Mtimunya, we're not necessarily going to go back to all the provinces and say to them, these are the answers to the presentation that you have made to us. Please, the colleagues on my left. Anything you want to respond to? It screams at you. I'm trying to kill the currents. Should we give you about 3 minutes to just contact with each other on that? Then we can deal with the next item and come back. Honourable members, with your permission then, can I deal with the matter of the chairperson? Madam. Deal with the matter of the chairperson, please. Yes, we have. What we've decided to do is to give our colleagues there 3 minutes to consult, and then we deal with the chairperson and the minutes in the meantime.
Good morning. Good afternoon, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Nosi Zulu. My role is to facilitate the process of electing a chairperson in terms of section, in terms of the NSOP rule 92. Therefore, I would like to invite members of the select committee to nominate the chairperson. Yes, honorable.
I am Masifa Godlaba-Dikhale from Limpopo Province. I raise my hand to nominate the name of Honorable Ntebe as the chairperson of the committee. And I'm happy today that no more dealing with the 18 churches. It's something tangible. Thank you very much, please.
I do check.
Any second nomination? Thank you.
question, Ms. Kunraj.
Chair, can we agree that you proceed? Thank you so much.
No. The chair is instructing me to conclude the meeting. Can I just say, Honorable Ntebe, we are grateful, you know, that we have a good team, and we would want to assure you of our support as you take over this responsibility. Congratulations as well. Can I say, members, we have the meeting minutes of the meeting before us when we had the presentation that was done to us by the Department of Energy. It was just a presentation. We've had deliberations, we accepted the presentation, and none of us can say that we have not looked at it because we're debating it within an hour from now. The conclusion of the meeting was just that the chairperson commended the good work that is being done at the Palindava nuclear plant for providing excellent training. He then thanked the department for their contribution in the overall economy. Can I get a proposal for the acceptance of this minutes? Accepting the minutes is going to be half an hour. Half a minute. The minutes of the 1st of April 2016 is the only minutes that we have left. My God, no, sorry. No, then I'm going to agree with you, Honorable Father. I mean, Honorable Dikhale. Yes, again, where am I going to? No, I saw him giving me three, and I thought it's for the three of us here. We will hold back on the doctrine of the minutes, please. Do I have your obey with that, members? Because we want to finish the main business. The minutes we can still do next week.
Accept it.
We can, but we wouldn't. Let's get the feedback from the colleagues there, please. Please proceed.
Maybe if you alluded to 613, where there is the apparent conflict with section 26(3) of the Constitution. If you look at section 93 of the bill, it is an expropriating authority of the person on whose behalf the property was expropriated must take possession of the expropriated property on the date stated in terms of section 8(b)(f) or such other dates may be agreed upon with the expropriated owner or the expropriated holder. So what in the process of expropriation at a certain point there is a notice of expropriation, and that notice must also include the date on which the right to possession of the property will pass to the expropriating authority. So what section 92A says is if it's not agreeable to both parties, then it shift to a date as such date as might be agreed upon by the party. So in terms of section 26(3) of the Constitution, the date of expropriation must be agreed upon by the parties, and that is exactly what this section does.
Let's have all the responses first on the Jimunia. Are there any further responses from our colleagues on the left? No. Okay. Honorable Van Leyen? Honorable Jimunia, sorry. Ntebe.
Chairperson, that point 6.3, they are trying to tell us that 92A is in conflict with Section 26(3) of the Constitution. Now, I can't understand why they merely refer to the date here in terms of 92A and not the fact that you cannot be kicked out of your house and your house cannot be repossessed. That is what Clause 26 says, isn't it, in the Constitution? And that would mean that everybody in South Africa, and there are something like 8 million property owners with black owners of houses in South Africa, and their houses are all at risk. And then, so this is a critical thing. And then I can just find this piece of paper in front of me. The point is made here is the fact that you cannot be kicked out of your house. Your house cannot be repossessed. That's it. So my question, now that we have this incredible silence in terms of that, and also in terms of the whole bill in general, if there is anybody of the State Board advisors that want to say to us now that this bill is not unconstitutional on various matters raised, then we must minute it like that so that it becomes an official document that can be referred to in court in our minutes of today. That the state law advisors are saying it is not unconstitutional, and thereby the courts can say this is the story. The state law advisors said that it is not unconstitutional, and the matter can be proceeded with.
You have a mandate to speak on behalf of the Western Cape.
Chairperson, I have a mandate as a member of Parliament and a member of the National Council of Provinces to raise a matter of constitutionality. Our mandate is clear in Section
72. No, wait.
Our mandate is clear in terms of Section 72(1)(a) of the Constitution. We must make proper laws. And if we don't make proper laws, then we are not...
So you're expressing a position that doesn't necessarily assume that that's what Western Cape wants to say. So that's fine. Earlier on, accepted assumptions are accepted again. Honourable Tere?
Now, Chair, obviously the difficulty is that in the presence of the departmental person who was there to give advice to the portfolio committee, some of the majority of the issues that are raised here are captured in the bill itself. But I just want to indicate two or more things that probably, I think the issue of the property, we have extensively clarified that issue. It's even explicit in the bill. The issue of the valuator, the valuer, the definition of the valuer only relates to the valuation of land. I think it's an issue of interpretation, but I take the point of the Western Cape that we have agreed that property is not limited to land. And therefore, this must be consistent with what the bill seeks to say, that the valuer will relate to the property as defined in the bill and as consistent with the Constitution. But all other issues that are here, Chair, and please, let's not use the court as boogeyman to scare away people from commenting on the meetings. Because we are here to find a better expression and understanding of what our legal minds can be able to. We can't use the courts as bullymen to scare them away from commenting. I think we must defend them. Thank you, sir.
Let me just check. Do you want to say a word on this?
No, I'm glad that you're asking the Honourable Huan to come in, because I think that's the point that the Honourable Fleming is trying to draw our attention to, not necessarily in an unclumsy way, but nonetheless is crazy, I think, is what would be useful to have the state law advisor give us a clear explanation as to why Section 25, which is property clause, which empowers the state to expropriate for public purpose and public interest, why that and Section 26 of the Bill of Rights are not in conflict when it comes to a house, for instance, a home. But I think it would be useful for us to, because we want to also be reassured. We're not trying to drive this thing through in a bloody-minded way, in a sort of mindless thing. We do want to be absolutely sure that the legislation that comes through the National Assembly and through the NCOP
is constitutionally compliant. That's to say that there won't be challenges, there might be challenges, but we want to be very sure. So I think that underpinning what the Honourable Thundringham is saying is, I think, an issue which I think would be useful for the State Law Advisor. And I'm not sure whether Mr. Hearn now, maybe he can give us something that would be useful also then to get I would propose, it's hard for me to say that, but propose that if when you meet next time, there could actually be a formal submission in regard to that. I think it's just so that we're very sure, because we want to be sure, certainly as a department, that what we're doing is constitutional.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Jay. Yes, sorry, I might have asked you I read with getting my age, my eyes aren't so good, so I read 25-3, not 26-3. It's still not in conflict, but it will be a longer explanation, and I think it would be better if we put it in maybe in writing instead of trying to explain it offhand and just not thinking carefully about what I'm going to say.
Can I just check it with you in this way? It would be very helpful to have it in writing. I think that the Honourable Fernand feels strongly about that. Can you tell us when that could be made available to us?
Well, see, tomorrow, if need be, I can work it. The long and the short is that Section 26.3 says that no legislation may permit arbitrary evictions. We have a law of general application which really, in terms of Section 25, may not be arbitrary, but I will have something tomorrow and send it to the clerk of the
Secretary Committee. Are you happy in that way, Honourable McLennan? Please respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. And then you accept the explanation that he gives. As a committee, we then accept the, and it's accept in period. Or we take it, or we note it, or whatever.
Let's not try and preempt that. I think what is before us now is that you're raising a very strong position that it is against the Constitution. It's the only point in the entire presentation that have been raised that is against the Constitution. We're saying, because we take the Constitution seriously, let it give that to us. We're not going to make a decision now to say that it supports or it's against the Constitution. What we have been told is that it's not. It's just the explanation will take long. There's nothing inhibiting you that before we negotiate the final mandates next week, any one of us, to then say that this has been the response from that on that particular matter. Right? And then obviously we are, in terms of the democratic process, allowed to vote on everything. And then what happens is that if there is a minority vote on something, minority opinion, the chairperson of that session will have to register that in the House. Now, minority doesn't mean only that it's a minority vote. We could, for example, say that we have to report when we make the presentation to the House that this has been the position of one of the members on that matter. As a minority position, or as the majority positions normally we don't worry about. But it's a minority position that we are, in terms of our rules, obligated to register to the House. And we will register it to the House because we don't vote. It's the final decision is going to be taken by the members in the House who are from the provinces. Let me have your last word on that and we can...
Thank you, Chairperson. Another point that I would like to just ask for a copy is, you know, Minister Gordhan said that every single new piece of legislation that's being passed will have a socio-economic assessment. And I know that's the job of the Parliamentary Budget Office or somebody that does that on behalf of Parliament. Can I please have a copy of that document?
Does anybody have more information than I have on that matter? I'm not talking to the people here. Minister Parabin, can you ask the researcher and the contact advisor to work for us on that? Minister Gordhan said that for every act that will be passed, there will be a socio-economic assessment, whether we can get a copy of such a document. Okay, thank you. No, no, you can you can have it by tomorrow at noon. Right, am I right? Well, you can't go unless we have. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We still have provinces. Did you allow us? Let me do it this way. Is there any reason from your side, based on the comments that we've received from any one of the provinces, that you would want us to deal with any of the comments, particularly that you have made with any one of the 9 provinces?
That's just one change. That is the matter of the non-tape. I just feel strongly that it must be referred to the provincial delegation for deliberation if they would make a determination to go back to a province or to make a decision on their own.
No, that is what I said, so it's fine. Can I then check with you, Honorable Timunia, are you in favor of us proceeding with this process? Can I then, maybe excuse you, but let's hear from any of the other members. You should have asked the question to all the members. That would have made it much easier for us. We have had these presentations from the 9 provinces. Now, what we're supposed to do is to go through province by province again. To say that on this province, we have no problem. On that province, we have no problems. Now, what we have done was to note the comments that you've been making. Therefore, I want to test with you that we agree on the processing based on the presentations that have been made by the provinces, and then to check with you that do you accept the conversation that we've happened? Is there anything, as has been done by Honorable Timunia now, and as we've done with that clause 25 and 26 from the Western Cape, any one of those things that you'd want us to raise with the problem? Because what we're doing now is that we're trying to bring the whole thing together and to report back to the provinces and say to the provinces, this is what we need to change, otherwise are you prepared to give us your final mandate? So before we seek that final mandate from the provinces, is there anything based on what has been presented to us here that you feel we need to go back to the provinces on? Honorable Van Lennon, then Honorable Terry.
Listen, that you are saying you're now adding a new stick. You want to refer it back to the provincial delegation. I don't understand the procedures at all. What are you expecting us to do now? You want us to say, as far as the Eastern Cape is concerned, we say 2.4 has been debated, but not necessarily addressed. That's what I can tell the province.
That's right, yeah.
So I'm not satisfied that it's been, but between the two of us, we must be in agreement. So who's got the vote? The province has the vote.
Yes. But we can help you. We can help you, honourable members. We are we're collegial in this. If you have a point, and we agree with you on the point, we will raise that point. Okay, that's what we're going to do on Eastern Cape. Let's hear anything on Eastern Cape that want us to go back to the province on. Okay, let's give you a time to think about that.
No, sir.
No.
When I was listening to the debate and the response from the department,
it was said that in terms of the law, there is not necessarily something that prevents them from conceding to what is being proposed. I'd have to check if I have them clear, but in terms of the law, there's nothing prohibiting them to extend. Although there was no agreement in terms of saying yes to what we're proposing.
Okay. Chairperson, when you present this to the House, I think it would help us as a select committee as well if you raise these conversations that we've had in the House, and I can help you on that. But just to say that, because I've been chairing, not because I'm better taking notes than I do, but then we can work together on that so that we present it to the House as well. But we say Easter Cape, it was only 2.4, and we're happy with that. KZN, I didn't pick up anything in KZN. It's covered in the process. So we don't have to worry. Then it is Free State. I think Free State, we've dealt with them all. I mean, there is lots of questions, but there wasn't one that we left hanging. The interest, but we've dealt with the interest because it says it's covered by the Public Finance Management Act. Okay. Eastern traffic reflectors, chip again. No, my problem here that I'm trying to work from the documents. We dealt with Free State. How Chen? There was nothing. That one we dealt with very quickly. And I'm from there. Okay. Limpopo? You feel strongly about the question of the traditional leaders?
Yeah, but definitely.
Okay.
That one must be addressed. The traditional leaders also need to have power.
Okay.
You know, the only thing that I must raise is that we have agreed with Northwest.
No, Northwest has not agreed with you.
Yes, on the issue of traditional leaders. No.
That's not my reading.
No.
Northwest is saying that in their presentation they've had the traditional leaders present and they have had a good conversation with the traditional leaders. You are saying, if I understand you properly, Limpopo province is saying that traditional leaders must be part of an expropriation authority. Mara. Okay. And we have an answer for that, but you are saying that that's the position of the province. So just to be courteous, we would want to communicate that back to them. But I think the general feeling of the House, Honorable Dikhale, was that no, this will not at this moment. It can come in later. But for the moment, the traditional leadership, the National House of Traditional Leaders, or the traditional authority, members in this select committee don't necessarily feel that they must be part of the matter. Now. No, it's fine. It's fine. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member from Limpopo. The perspective of the department is that we are not giving or taking away any existing expropriating powers, okay, in this piece of legislation. And therefore, while a good argument might be made for making traditional leadership in one form or another have for giving them expropriating powers, that's not the job of this legislation. So I hope that is the mandate and explanation. In other words, that argument can continue, but should not be an argument that is placed inside of this legislation. That's the view of the department. I hope that's clear. In other words, it would have to be separate legislation dealing specifically with traditional leaders that would give them expropriating powers. But there's other bits of legislation, give ministers or premiers or municipalities expropriating powers. We're not giving anybody expropriating powers other than, or taking away existing expropriating powers. This is a broad framework piece of legislation. So, but at the same time, obviously, all stakeholders in terms of this legislation, which would include any traditional leaders when they're affected, need to be thoroughly consulted in the process. So I hope that empowers the colleague to at least give the perspective of the department. Okay.
Thank you very much. I'm consistently being subject to requests from members to say I need to finalize my speech. We need two debates on economic developments and on energy. And if we don't have economic development and energy in this country, then land expropriation is not going to help us. So let us look at Northwest. Honorable Tebe, are you happy that we've answered your concerns raised by the province?
Adequately, Chair. I think the attachment predominantly the bigger portion which was submitted by the Royal Bank of the Nation. It needs some better conversation with Germany. There are issues that are already in the bill.
But also that is where the link comes in with Honorable Dikhale, but it relates particularly to the Royal Afokeng who were part of this. But if you talk to the what's the group in Pilanswat area in Moroleng village that we visited?
The Vakatla.
The Vakatla group there as well. We can work with the department in terms of just giving feedback to those authorities. The Northern Cape, we have already dealt with. Just the one matter, right? Then the Western Cape, there was just that one matter as well, as it relates to the conflict between 25. That's a separate matter. It doesn't relate to expropriation, though, does it? Okay. Can we then thank you very much, honourable members. Thank you very much to the State Legal Advisor. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, your colleagues, to the staff, to the observers, to this meeting. Thanks. We've gone way beyond what we normally do. Appreciate it. We see you tomorrow, and we're working the weekend as well.